Welcome to Dare to Innovate. We're here live in San Francisco at Salesforce's Dreamforce conference. We've been here all week having lots of great conversations around the Salesforce and Salesforce ecosystem and really SaaS applications in general. And so that really brings us to our topic for today. Our topic for today is the future of SaaS and really the management of those licenses and applications. And I'm very excited for the two guests that I have here today to bring some insights into this world. With me today, I have Hyun Park, who is the chief analyst and founder of Amalgam Insights, as well as Giulio Dialli, the head of SaaS management from Kalero. Thank you both for joining me. We're here to talk about the future of SaaS and SaaS management and licenses and all the fun things that go into that. This was our first Dare to Innovate podcast back about a year ago, and I still think probably one of our most watched episodes that we have. And it's a very interesting subject, and the evolution of SaaS continues to, you know, evolve daily, weekly, monthly. And as we begin to think about this, there's been a lot of change in the last year. A lot of vendors have changed, a lot of consolidation in the industry as well. And so we really just want to dive into the topic a little bit more and hear from you guys of what's changed and how it's really evolved. And really for our audience, you know, what's important about it as we think about SaaS licenses and SaaS management. So as we begin to dive in, I'd love to hear, Hyun, starting with you, you know, what's evolved over the last year in the SaaS space and SaaS license space?
Yeah, it's been a really challenging time for the SaaS market. For about 4 or 5 years previous to this year, we saw a very consistent growth in the SaaS world, where SaaS spend basically kept growing 20% year after year, and we started getting up to $150 billion plus in global SaaS spend. And then about the end of last year, everybody started getting scared. I'm still not really sure why this happened, but we all saw it, that there's this economic freak out where every CEO in the world just decided we might be having a recession. Not we are having a recession, just we might be having a recession, right? And then everybody just stopped spending. So this year, the numbers look really weird, where if you look at the end of last Q4 or Q1, the spend is, there's almost no SaaS growth whatsoever. And then if you look at the Q2 numbers, it's like we're all back to normal and like nothing ever happened. So the SaaS market is very odd in that regard. And then as for SaaS management itself, it's still very much a market that is spread out. Lots of niche players, and I think to some extent we are still struggling as a whole to figure out what SaaS management actually means across all these areas of sourcing, procurement, invoices, payments, technical management, API management, all these areas where SaaS really affects the company and where we are trying to figure out what it means to manage the 1,000 apps that a large enterprise has.
When you think about the kind of the freak out that happened, as you put it, you know, it didn't seem to be based in any reality. And it seemed to be focused on SaaS. And is that because it was, in your view, was it easy to get rid of stuff? Is it easy to cancel? What was the, SaaS seemed to be more affected than other spaces within technology. And why do you think that to be the case?
Well, there are a couple things that happened. First, it's very easy to buy SaaS, right? When you are trying to solve a problem, it is easy to look at some random website with some random app and think, I can just spend $100 and solve that problem right here and now. The problem is that in a company of 10,000 people, you might have 100 people who all independently find that same solution, and all of a sudden you've got 100 bills for the exact same thing, except without being able to have discounts or consistent contracts. And so companies were starting to dig in and find out, wait, why do we have 100 bills for this same product? And how do we start consolidating this? And how do we make sense of this if, say, instead of, say, 100 bills of the same product, you had 10 different products that were all doing the same thing? There's a very messy SaaS environment that existed. At Amalgam Insights, we talk about the IT rule of 30, where every unmanaged spend category averages 30% in waste. And SaaS is no exception. And SaaS was an easy place to start for companies that had not previously cleaned up that area.
Yeah.
And I think to add to that, there's a lots of siloed purchasing, to your point. And it's not just more of the same, it's different. So now when they discover and realize what they've got like 20 project management apps because different departments or different legal entities are doing their own purchasing. And so they then realize it's not just a spend problem, but it's like, how do we actually function as a business because we're all in different systems? And so that's another challenge that our customers are seeing, is to try and rationalize that into a single spend.
Yeah, and so Julia, to pull on that thread a little bit, we've seen a lot of change in the SaaS space in terms of how licensing happens. Some of it's been government regulated with what's happened in the EU and Microsoft, and some of it's just been market trends. Talk to me a little bit more about some of the market trends we've seen and some of the changes within some of the licensing that we've seen that is even going to make the mess even larger.
Well, so obviously the first and obvious one, linked to your point about the fear of recession, is that licensing has gone up. You know, we're here at Dreamforce, and we can see that just themselves have put up the prices by an average of like 9%. And that's pretty consistent across the base. So that's making people think more seriously about, well, do we need that level of licensing as well as, you know, the proliferation of the apps? Then next to that is the vendors are getting cleverer and more responsive to the need to, you know, turn down. So they're having true-up contracts. And those true-up contracts are nuanced and different depending on the space. So for example, in the UCaaS space, it can be quite usage-driven. They have good usage data. So your licenses will go up and down, and you think you're getting a good deal, but really there's still the consumption element with the calls and the breakouts that go over and that. So that's still a cost to be borne by the company. And then in the traditional SaaS, it's more an all-you-can-eat plan. When they say true up, what it really means is, I call them like an escalator contract. So it's, you can keep provisioning licenses beyond what you're allowed to have, but all that happens is that it's like a mini contract review, right? You've just jumped up the escalator and now you're at 300 licenses rather than 200, getting in some extra funds. But there's no mechanism to bring that back down. So without the license management, you are just on this escalator going up. People need to be aware of that and realize that the management helps them have visibility and control of what's going on, and give them a way to come back down on that escalator and not just forever go up. And then there's obviously Microsoft, right? So that's the big disruptor at the moment, particularly in the EU region. We might see it come elsewhere, but with the latest breakout of Teams that they've had to do, so it used to be bundled packaged as part of the Office suite. It's now a separate add-on, or will be as of October the 1st. And it's a tale of two halves here, because if you don't use Teams, and let's say you're a Zoom or RingCentral or any other UCaaS user, then great, you're probably going to save a couple of euros because actually the price of each package goes down. But if you do use Teams and you're an existing incumbent Teams user, then at renewal, you're okay. But if you're a new customer and you're expanding and adding on, then you've now actually got an extra €5 add-on within the EU region. So net off your €3 per seat extra as an expenditure. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, given that it was an antitrust movement that caused Microsoft to break out, this wasn't their choice, that this will now spread, you know, within other regions.
Well, I mean, certainly from a Microsoft perspective, you know, billing and making it easy has been something they've done, as well as bundling things in. But now as they begin to separate it in the EU, and if the economic model works out well, I think we may see see that happen a little bit more.
Yeah.
What's your view on that?
I think another interesting piece about Microsoft is their recent announcement around the Copilot assistants that are happening. Of course, AI is everywhere.
Hey, how long did we talk without saying AI?
4 seconds.
We made it 4 minutes. Just like everybody else in tech. But from a practical perspective, getting down to the nitty-gritty, I think it's interesting that they are charging basically $30 per user per month, pretty high price for this Copilot capability. I can't imagine that there won't be some sort of hiccups on the billing side as they figure out how to make Copilot into an add-on across all of Microsoft's capabilities. Anytime you do this type of add-on that goes across your entire portfolio, there tends to be some sort of billing mess up. So I'm just expecting that to happen.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you're billing across thousands, hundreds of thousands of clients and you're changing something, it's gonna it's going to evolve.
Right.
And there's going to be mistakes with it. So, Hyun, you said something earlier on that I wanted to dive into, because I think this is the number that, one, it's hard to believe. Mm-hmm. Two, I've seen 40 different numbers out there that are associated with it. You know, I think you mentioned somewhere around 1,000 apps for an enterprise.
Yes.
Tell me more about that. It is a concept that is really hard to get your head around, that they have 1,000 SaaS applications that really run the business.
Yes, and there's kind of these different tiers that happen within an organization. That for a small company, up to your first 100 employees, you tend to add an app per employee, both as employees want to use specific products and as you start adding departments. Obviously, a two-person company does not have 13 different departments. But once you start getting up to 30 or 40 people, you do have, you know, 5, 6, 7 discrete departments, and your sales department needs something, your marketing department needs something, your operations department needs something, your help desk needs something, and not just one thing, usually 5 or 6 apps per department. That's very normal. So all of a sudden, you've got 30 people, 30 apps, and that starts going up until you get to 100 people, 100 apps. And then as you start growing from about 100 to 500 employees, you're still growing pretty rapidly, probably one new app for every 2 or 3 employees until you get to about 500 employees. You've probably got about 250 apps in your organization at that point. And then the growth starts getting a little slower, but once you start getting to call it that 10,000, 20-person, 20,000 person enterprise, you've probably got 1,000 apps and data sources that you are putting together as you've differentiated your departments and gotten more specific capabilities that you're trying to support. So yeah, that growth is amazing, but it's pretty consistent when you look at a number of different SaaS management companies have done their own benchmarks, and when you look at their 5,000 plus employee numbers and the number of apps that they talk about, they're regularly talking about 600, 700, 800, you know, at that bottom point. Here at Dreamforce, Salesforce, MuleSoft does their own measure of the average number of apps supported per account. And right now they're talking about, I think it's something like 1,040, you know, it's over 1,000 apps.
Yeah, on average.
And that's a pretty consistent number that we're seeing across the board now for, call it, large enterprise, that 10,000 person global enterprise.
Julia, I think it's something we've discussed is, you know, this, I think this is definitionary. Like, you know, you think about the Microsoft suite. Well, is that one app or is it 30 apps? Because in Office 365, you get access to everything. How do you count Excel? How do you count Teams? How do you count Outlook and, you know, all the other ones? Adobe in the same way. Like, you know, are those multiple apps or is it one app because it's one license? But am I looking at usage? Yeah, I think about this kind of in the mobile space. Well, Verizon gives me unlimited, or Vodafone gives me unlimited. I have all I can eat, but am I using all of those?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, apps, we think of them as like the discrete program or interface or tool that you're using, but they're not necessarily licensed like that. They can come in packages. And obviously the SaaS vendors do like to land and expand. Take Zoom, you know, their market started off with Zoom meetings, and now you've got phone and rooms and call center, all these other bits and pieces that add on. So that's how you've seen the proliferation, to the point that they themselves have realized, well, let's just offer Zoom One as the package, but it's still a collection of apps. And that's why, you know, we talk about apps and we look at apps, because to have the knowledge and intelligence at the app level, you can then understand, well, how do packages play into this? Should you just have the one app? Should you have the package? I think the other part to your point is really in the enterprise space is mergers and acquisitions, right? As you start to bring together these companies, there's going to be overlap. There's going to be different apps that do the same function, and they need to be rationalized.
So we've talked about a lot about apps and we've talked about licenses. Let's move over to the management side. And as we think about, you know, and our audience that's listening to this, Let's think about the management. When we think about other industries that have gone through this, or other types of spend that have gone through this, SaaS really hasn't gone through a heavy management layer that's managing, as Hyun mentioned earlier, that kind of procure to pay life cycle. You know, what are the recommendations, Hyun, for the audience, whether you're an enterprise, whether you're in mid-market or SMB, as we begin to think about taking control of what's going on?
Yes, and I'm sure, Giulio, you have a bunch of thoughts here as well. but I'll just kick it off by saying that the first challenge is simply aggregating that spend and figuring out how many SaaS applications actually exist in your organization. And the biggest problem there is that the majority of apps in an enterprise are typically not brought in by IT. Because this is so easy to purchase, every department can individually choose their own apps that they want. And frankly, IT often isn't well suited to judge whether an app is useful or not. If, for instance, we're talking about media management, figuring out how to edit a video, figuring out a learning and department application to figure out ongoing education, you know, things like that. These are not IT decisions, right? This is not like choosing an SAP or choosing a telephone carrier. You know, these are apps that are completely use-based and user-based. So it's hard to find this information, and often it's hiding in your procurement card, your expense management solutions, your general expense management solutions. Yeah. You know, they're hiding in these expense accounts and reports that often don't have very much detail to start with.
So Giulio, I mean, you had mentioned a few places there. Where, in your view, do enterprises or organizations start? How do you start this journey? Because to me, when I think about 1,040 applications, it's kind of overwhelming when you think, oh, how do I rationalize that? Where do I start?
Yeah, so generally, people come to us with two immediate problems. First off is discovery, to your point. Like, what have I even got where? And I think you're right. The IT department is no longer the king of this kingdom. They couldn't say it is okay to remove this thing. There could be a serious business impact to do so. So that's why we have an end user engagement to understand not just what you've got, but why are you using it and is it needed? So that's an important point. They also come to us normally with a very specific problem. So some contract renewal is top of their mind and they want to get a quick win in that area, call it Microsoft or Zoom or whichever one is at the forefront of their mind. So we'd typically connect that first.
Given we're at Dreamforce, yeah. Maybe Salesforce too.
Maybe Salesforce
too.
I'm just throwing out
another idea.
Salesforce is often top of the list, indeed. So it's often like deep dive on that one or two things that are an immediate pain. Meanwhile, do the discovery. And the discovery is an art of it's a multi-pronged art, right? Because there's single sign-on connectors, there's endpoint management, there's AP systems and GL ledgers, there's credit card receipts, there's all sorts of silos where we can aggregate this data together to build the picture. That's the first thing, build the picture, which is often quite noisy, right? So it's mapping that to the catalog to actually get true understanding. Like, what does this line mean? Oh, that's actually the Photoshop Creative Suite. That's what that means, for example. So with that, you now have a landscape to work with. The next challenge is identifying the owners, like who on earth actually ordered Adobe Creative Suite, to your point, on these silos. And this is where the end user engagement comes in, right? To discover, okay, it was on this credit card, so therefore they're likely the owner, or it was on this GL account, so that department owns that GL. And so we start to get ownership, because with ownership, you then get the accountability, right? And you can start to do something. Until you've got ownership, you know, you can go and talk to your blue in the face to IT, they're not gonna do anything about it, to your point, because they're fearful of turning anything off. Mm-hmm.
So that's a really interesting point. We talked a lot about IT, and IT doesn't own it. Nor can they contextually understand why someone would want Adobe Creative Suite or whether that's the right application, and they may see three other types of those same applications. Where in the organization, who should be taking ownership of this? Is it procurement? Is it finance? Is it lines of business? Like, where, you know, Hyun, in your point of view, and then Julie, I'd love to hear you too. Who should be carrying the banner for SaaS management? Is it the CFO and the office of the CFO, or is it someplace else?
I think that's part of what makes this challenging, is that it is a multifaceted challenge. You have to have line of business managers who are experts of figuring out the functional use of this SaaS. IT is never going to know what to do with Adobe products, for instance.
Right.
But at the same time, the CFO is always going to look at these categories, and you know, we've seen project management as kind of the prototypical example. Julia, you brought up, you know, the 20 project management apps that you might have in your organization. And if you're a CFO and you see that, you just think, oh, 19 of those are redundant or useless, and I just need one project management solution to rule them all, which isn't necessarily actually the case, because each of these solutions has some sort of different departmental use case, or maybe they're better for casual projects, or maybe one's better for looking at cash or real estate or all these other complicated things that can come into play. So there's that part that comes into play as well. But then there's also a third piece, that every SaaS application also has an API. And we all talk about how data-driven decisions are so important and how data drives business, blah, 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 blah. And at the end of the day, when that happens, to make all the data come together, that's when IT does get involved. Whenever an application gets big enough that you get hundreds of users and you get interactions with other applications, then all of a sudden everybody comes back to IT and says, oh, we just realized this is a problem. Here, you know, hot potato, go fix it.
Well, you're right. In terms of like management information, it's often that lands in IT to glue these things together. But in terms of ownership, it feels like it's more in finance, because you mentioned earlier how, you know, that the fear has stopped as much growth as there was within the SaaS space. But what we have seen is, as a percentage of the spend of the entire business, it's risen, right? Because all the other bits have gone down, but relatively it's gone up. So from a finance perspective, it's going to be the top two or three items now of their spend that they need to understand and control. Maybe not down to the individual app level, you know, that's where our tools and our systems come in to help, but at least from a total cost, mm-hmm. they need to understand that, and they need to have a grip and understand what's the value of this large chunk of expense.
Yeah, what's the and obviously applications. You know, as Hyun, I think you mentioned, you have what I would call company-wide applications, things like Microsoft and other things like that, or your Teams or your Zoom or whatever you're using to communicate across that, or a Slack or a Salesforce. You have platform-level applications, and then you have individual applications. And what's your guys' view on what needs to be managed, what doesn't need to be managed, and where should they really start? Because, you know, we always heard, and I've heard a few times, well, you know, Microsoft, I have a 3-year contract. There's not really much to do about it. Let's focus over here. But there is stuff to do about it at the end of the day, even intra-contract.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is like the top X apps for a business, and then the long tail of all this other stuff that keeps coming in, right? And I think that self-service nature not only makes that worse, but actually a lot of it you realize is experimental. I mean, talk about AI again, but what people are doing, you know, in marketing or even engineering, etc., is they're saying, well, let me just experiment with this thing. And you don't know whether is this a trial, is this going to have longevity?
Right.
And so you don't want to burn time on that, right? So we generally watch for like a spike of uptake, and we see that apps can be actually quite viral. So, you know, especially collaborative apps, like take Mural, for example. Someone gets it just for two people to share ideas. Next thing you know, 100 people are on 50 different boards, and it's now sort of spread throughout the ecosystem. And it's at that point where you watch like the velocity or the acceleration of the app within the organization that you realize, okay, it now needs management. And I think it's probably that curve that helps you ideate, is it now right to be managing that, or can we just ignore it? It's probably a trial. It's probably a small niche thing.
Right. I tend to think of it as kind of three tiers. Your first tier are those core apps, the 25 to 50 apps that really are fundamental to your business, probably a Salesforce, probably a Microsoft, maybe an Oracle, an SAP, a NetSuite, all those big players, Adobe, obviously. Everything that really fundamentally affects what you do from a productivity, or organizational, or creative perspective. Then there's this second tier, call it a kind of a Pareto, you know, the 20% that do 80% of the work, and then you've got the other 80%. So if you've got like 50 core apps, you've probably got another 150 to 200 apps that show up somewhat, but have some sort of niche capability. And as you brought up earlier, you know, the idea that some of these apps are going to be more viral and grow more quickly than others. You're going to be surprised to see, you know, in a 1,000-person company, oh, all of a sudden I have 50 seats of this, and it's in that 200 app bucket. of, you know, it wasn't core, but it just happens to be growing like wildfire in your organization. And obviously those have to be managed. But what happens in the large enterprise level is that there's actually a second level of Pareto. So you might have those 250 apps and think you're under control. But then as you start looking at your network behavior and you start looking at your smartphones and see the apps that are associated with those that may also have a web component, that's where those other 700 apps come in. And how important is it to manage those? You know, if it's just a one-off license, honestly, you know, it's not going to be a top priority. You should know what it is just in case, probably more for governance reasons, because you want to know which vendors have potential access to your users and data. But those one-offs aren't necessarily things that you need to manage to the same degree, obviously, as a Microsoft or Salesforce.
Actually, you brought up a good point there, because we talked about how IT can't control this all, and they're not the king of the kingdom, but they are keenly aware and a critical stakeholder in terms of governance and InfoSec. Like, if this new thing has entered their ecosystem, they do get value from that discovery and observability to just know what is going on and who are the users and why, mm-hmm. right? So that does play a different angle, but an important point beyond the expense side.
You know, the next topic I kind of wanted to dig into is, and you mentioned it earlier, 30% savings in an unmanaged area, but that's not the only effect when you think about managing a new area. What are some of the other effects that managing SaaS could have on an enterprise? You know, Giulio, do you want to kick this off?
Managing SaaS at the enterprise is a challenge because, first off, these apps often grow to actually run the business, you know, to what you mentioned earlier. And in the enterprise scale, you then have to think of the security, the compliance, where's this app hosted, what's the redundancy of the app? You know, if this is a critical thing that links to your ERP system or something, it suddenly disappears. You need to understand that. You need to understand the awareness and what's the backup, what's the failover. So there's a broader operational concern, really, within the enterprise. And there's also a real deep need to understand usage still, because you might be using certain features and functions that allow changes to packages and plans and prices that are unique per department or per division. And you don't really want a one-size-fits-all, because that's both wasteful, but it also increases your exposure. So some of the challenges. There's plenty more, maybe, here.
Yes, and I think from a business perspective, there are some practical aspects of figuring out process mapping and figuring out which apps are associated to which processes, and then figuring out what the nature is of each API associated with each app, because you wonder how these apps are going to work together. You have to worry about how the data is formatted for each of these apps, especially as we start thinking about artificial intelligence and advanced analytics and predictions and all of the fancy schmancy stuff. To get there, you first have to know how the data actually works. And I think that ultimately, this is not just a technical challenge, although the governance and security obviously also matter immensely, but also a business process challenge and a definitional challenge of what data and what metadata and what user-related tasks are associated with each app.
Yeah, and then coming back to the financial aspect, you know, especially when you've got, say, 10,000 users, what you'll get through SaaS is one giant aggregated bill of, say, $20 million for this month or whatever it is. And the first thought is, well, who's using what? And how do I allocate this back? And how is this linked to my AP? And is it going to get paid in time? Or is it going to get shut off? And so they're critical concerns, really, to make sure that the apps are funded effectively from the business units that are causing the cost, but also the AP hookup, the HR feed to understand the joiners and the leavers is all integrated to give you that full life cycle, you know, of what's going on in visibility.
So we obviously started this topic of enterprise, but is SaaS management just for an enterprise? And you know, if we think about SMB or other size organizations, do they have different concerns, the same concerns? What does that look like, Kim?
Yeah, so I think starting at the mid-market level, the key challenges are simply around visualization of visibility into the environment, and then understanding how to purchase these relatively quickly. which is why I would say there's a bunch of solutions that exist at this mid-market level that really just are kind of focused on creating a basic marketplace, a store, and then showing what bills look like. Frankly, that is a fairly commoditized capability in this market. And I think the challenge is as you go up market towards the enterprise, you start having to think about governance. You have to think about APIs. You have to think about data. You have to think about how SaaS works with the broader IT environment. And right now, if you're an enterprise and you've worked with SaaS for several years, you might have some capability to look at SaaS within your IT asset management or IT service management or IT financial management system, but you don't have a deep view into how SaaS really works in your organization because you just haven't had that specialized tool.
Well, I think that goes into a little bit, and Julio, I'd like to pull on this thread a little bit more because I think it's an interesting topic, but you know, they may see that they have the application within ITSM or some other system that they have and that they may be provisioning these applications for. Hey, he enjoyed the organization. He needs access to these 10 or 15 applications. But you were pulling on the usage side of it. Usage is key within this to understand what users are actually doing. How is usage associated with SaaS and SaaS licensing and all of that?
Yeah, usage is critical because the vendors effectively sell on what's called allocation, right? And then they probably add a consumption add-on for, say, storage or maybe calls if you're a UCaaS solution. But the key business model is all about seats and licenses allocated to users. And so they've got a very good understanding of that to say, you know, Julio has this license and so forth. But the usage for your own intelligence is critical to understand, well, do you need the gold package or the bronze package based on the activities that you're doing? And within a business, people's roles changes. They come onto a project.
What about the silver package? Yeah. Just bronze or gold?
No, nobody does the silver, right? But the point is that people's behaviors does change, right? So they're on a project, they're heavily into Mural for 6 months or whatever it is, and then they're off, right? And so their usage just drops off and you don't see that. You can see that they're allocated, but you need to understand that usage so that you can deallocate or repackage, right? So take Adobe Creative Suite. You know, we even see it within our own organization, right? We give everybody Creative Suites, brilliant. But actually, you look at a couple of users, they're only using Photoshop. So it's like, okay, well, I'll provision you Photoshop and give the Creative Suite to someone else.
I have it, I've never used it.
Yeah, exactly. So incredibly creative there, Andrew, incredibly creative, yeah.
As we were discussing last night, me trying to figure out how many applications I actually have access to,
yes.
And then as opposed to actually how many I use.
Exactly, yeah.
And very different numbers.
Yeah, and the thing that is challenging with usage that, you know, I find it exciting to solve actually, is that it comes from many different areas, right? There's endpoint management that's feeding in some data. There's GL ledgers that's feeding in some data, just like allocations. There's vendor portals themselves with APIs. Sometimes it might be a manual file upload. So it's bringing it all this together. And obviously, our great preference is automation, direct API integration. But not all vendors are made the same. Some vendors have come from the cloud and, you know, born in the cloud, API first, etc. Others were born on the desktop and then progress to the cloud, and so there's a hybrid.
You know, as we begin to think about SaaS management, you know, I see some overlap within other spaces, but I'd love to hear from you when you think about, do you see any other expense management spaces out there that have a similar history to SaaS management?
So it's interesting that I would say yes and no. Across the board, I look at telecom expense management, mobility or wireless expense management, software expense management, as well as cloud expense management, which is sometimes also called FinOps, cloud FinOps. And each of these are different. You know, the telecom expense management space really started to mature about 15 years ago, when a lot of money was thrown at it. A lot of venture capital firms tossed a ton of money at this space. And we started seeing that the invoice management started maturing into also looking at payment management and then also contract management. We saw rate plan optimization to figure out how to make sure you use the right number of calls and the right number of texts and we're paying for the right amount. We started seeing the duplicate accounts and the zero usage accounts show up. You know, and all of this is table stakes in telecom expense management. We look at all of this and we just think, oh, we're just going to do all that. And then also we're probably going to have some sort of help desk and maybe some sort of support for network transformation or understanding how to work with carriers at a higher level to look at network and voice strategy. Like all this is just stuff that you expect out of your telecom expense management solution at this point in time. Both SaaS expense management and cloud FinOps are much less mature at this point, where you're still mostly just looking at the bills, maybe have some sort of usage visibility, but haven't really gotten that deep into understanding contract terms or contract renewals or how to go deeper into the architecture of either your SaaS or your cloud environments. All of that is still relatively new. And I think that's a real opportunity as we start seeing both SaaS and cloud becoming more mature markets overall.
When you think about or at the high level buckets of what you do in telecom or mobile, and then you think about a procure-to-pay life cycle, are they different in SaaS? Or even in FinOps, you know, as you think about cloud, you still need to do the same activities at the end of the day to purchase it. You know, what I'm purchasing and what's the business case of why I purchased this application down into it, or is it, you know, are they different activities that need to happen?
So ironically, we talk about software silos and how each SaaS solution is a silo. SaaS management also has its own silos. Where yes, the procure to pay. Life cycle is, the steps remain the same. You still have to figure out what you're going to buy, and then you get your bill, and then you check your bill, and then you do your payment. None of that changes from category to category, but the biggest difference is that in SaaS, this isn't a linear path right now. These are all things that are being done at their own time, but often by different solutions and different people.
Right.
So it's just all over the place. And you might have step five happen before step two. And because there's no logic to who's doing what at any point, there's no schedules. And a lot of that needs to be brought together because there should be schedules.
Right.
And there should be some sort of logical way to figure out if I have zero usage accounts before I agree to my next contract, instead of just kind of finding this, you know, one thing out, happenstance every 18 months or whenever Bob gets around to looking around at it. Yeah.
Julio, obviously being in the, the telecom space for a while, the mobile space for a while, and even in the market data space, you know, what do you see within SaaS that you know, in terms of the management that's like those spaces or different than those spaces?
Well, it's that end user silo problem that we see. So if typical telecoms or even fintech, it will go to the market data management team or the IT department or maybe the procurement department. And it generally starts there. So the business has a need, but they'll produce a wrap and then distribute throughout the organization a function and a benefit. Whereas this viral nature is more a case of someone on a credit card buys one thing for 2-3 people on the bronze package, right? They start down there and then it spirals out, and now you need to get onto the gold package, which typically includes single sign-on and a whole bunch of other enterprise things. And so now that's where it almost jumps out of the Maverick purchase into the more formalized traditional purchase, maybe with contract negotiations and renewals and all the usual wrap that you would expect. So there's that evolution, really, that each individual app goes through rather than that more centralized, you know, well-oiled machine that we see elsewhere.
But I think it's also tempting to just go for that gold package because, you know, you've been using this app, you've been hiding it under the covers, and then suddenly the vendor tells you, oh, by the way, we can take care of all your governance problems, all your security problems, and give you unlimited usage, and you just have to throw a bit more money at us.
Yeah, and just go from $25 to $50 a month.
Right.
It's fine.
And for, you know, one app, 10 users, you think, oh, what the heck? But when you multiply that decision by 1,000 in your organization, suddenly it becomes real money.
and what we see actually is that Most apps have what I would call like the enterprise tax. Like they always put single sign-on on that far right package, mm-hmm. and everybody wants single sign-on, right? And so that's their lever for jacking up the prices.
Well,
and so
passwords, you know, you have to are be... bad.
Yeah, exactly. but they could offer the feature in other packages, but they don't.
Right.
Well,
right.
But that's just good packaging and pricing.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, at the end of the day, we talked about a lot, but why do you believe organizations need SaaS management? Yeah, and I'll start with you.
Well, fundamentally, SaaS is how we talk about digital enablement. When we talk about digital enablement, digital transformation, digital business, buzzwordy, this or that. To me, that basically means two things. I have a device that I'm using, probably a smartphone, a tablet, or a laptop. And then I'm using some app to do something. There's a more granular way of digging into data, and sure, there's relational databases, graph databases, vector databases, all that cool stuff around data and data lakes, which I also care deeply about and have a lot of fun playing with. But let's face it, for like 90% of people who do actual work, you care about the 20 apps that make up your workplace and that device you have. So managing SaaS is fundamentally how we manage our toolkit in the modern business. And if you're going to be responsible for dealing with that toolkit on a business basis, SaaS management is how you're going to do it.
Julio?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I'd add on, I think it's, for me, it's like the percentage of spend within the business. Like when you were to break down your GL in the business, SaaS is incredibly high now. And so, you know, it's natural that you're going to want to need to manage and understand that spend. So it all comes with the necessary understanding, the contract renewals. And the other thing with SaaS is, it's not like typically with telecoms, yes, you're going to have lots of contracts, but you'll get like the global mobility agreement with this particular vendor, and that helps you manage the nuances. With SaaS, all these contracts and dates and everything are all over the shop, right? And it needs ebb and flow. And so it's a challenge to manage this, but it's a necessary challenge to solve because of what it presents and what it represents as a percentage of spend.
Very interesting topics. Thank you two so much for being here. It's been great being in San Francisco at Dreamforce. Looking forward to seeing you guys at the next time on Dare to Innovate.
Stay on top of the conversation. Like and subscribe to our channel to get notified when our newest episodes release. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Dare to Innovate.